Well, hello everyone and welcome to Main Menu this week. This week we have Doug Joffrey from GW Micro with us. Hello, Doug.
Hello, Jeff.
And this week we're here to talk all about Window Eyes version 6.0. So, Doug, why don't you tell us a little bit about the new release?
Sure. We got lots to talk about this release, and actually over the past week we've been kind of putting out a Guess What series. So every day we've kind of been wetting people's lips a little bit about what some of the new features that we have. Certainly we can't talk about it all in those Guess What series, and they're pretty condensed even in some of the items that we talk about. But hopefully people have been listening to those, getting an idea of some of those, and hopefully during our talk here today we can get a little bit more in-depth of what all is going to be out with that.
So what were some of the goals for, you know, when you and Mike and Clarence and the rest of your gang over there at GW Micro sit down and go, okay, well, what are we going to do for Window Eyes version 6? What were some of your goals when you, put that up?
Those goals?
Sure, I understand, but what were some of your goals for Window Eyes version 6?
Yeah, and I mean, you're half joking when I say that, but the problem is when we do set out these goals, and I'll get to what those were, there are all sorts of things that are changing on us all the time. I mean, Microsoft either releases this application gets released or updated and things like that. So we're not so rigid that we say, okay, this version has to have this and only this, and we're not going to look at anything else outside of this realm, and when it's there, we're going to ship it and just go with that. So we're constantly in flux with our goals and what we're going to be doing with Window Eyes, and I think you have to be, especially in the computer industry, as we did that. So given all of that, our main goal was, we've been working on Office. We started way back in 5.0 and got Word what I think to be the best Word support out there. And then we released 5.5. I think we upped the bar with Excel. I think both of those still are up there as far as leading the way with those two applications. And then in the 6.0 release, we knew that we needed to finish that off and get some PowerPoint support in there. So we don't want to just go with what's out there already today. We want to make sure we up that bar, and I think we've done the same with PowerPoint. So we've kind of cleaned out the Office products. We also figured we needed to do a lot of work in Outlook, so we wanted to make sure PowerPoint and Outlook looked really well. A lot of our Braille users have been asking us, hey, Doug, you guys haven't really done much with Braille for quite a while. You know, we like what's there, but you really haven't done much serious with it for quite some time, and that's true. Since we've added Grade 2, we really haven't done too much to Braille. So we got together a big consortium, kind of an informal consortium group of Window Eyes Braille users, and they got together and hashed it out, because one of my frustrations is everybody's telling me what to do, and this Braille user wants that, and this guy says, no, that's crazy, I want this. And so basically last one standing kind of wins in this deal. So they got together and kind of gave me the top 10 things of what they wanted. And so I'm not sure we got all 10, but we certainly got the big ticket items that they wanted in this release, and we'll discuss that as well. And obviously stability. We've gotten some error reports coming into us using our unique error reporting that Window Eyes has. Those reports came in. We wanted to make sure that we're always working on stability. That comes, you know, first above everything else. So we wanted to make sure it's stable, clean off the rest of Office, and lots of other little clean-up-y things that we'll get to talk about as well. But those are the big-ticket items, and we know there's a lot of other big-ticket items out there that we need to address. Vista, for instance, and we'll talk more about that, but we had to make sure we addressed Vista. Office 2007, we had to make sure that worked. And those were difficult because those are moving targets. Both of them are coming closer to the release, but it's still difficult to know what they could do to it last minute. So we wanted to make sure we could at least hover around close enough that when they do release, we can jump on it and be able to support it when it's released and not necessarily a month or two or a year or whatever after the release. So we're certainly watching those as they come out. In IE7, we've been watching that, working closely with them to make sure all of that stuff works. And again, we'll talk about all of this stuff. But that's kind of the balls that we were juggling when we were thinking of 6.0. And there's a lot more that we want to add post-6.0, but that's where we are with 6.0 today.
Oh, great, Doug. Now, for those of your customers who are on SMA agreements, and for those that are not, can you tell us what will be the upgrade cost for this release? And then we'll jump right into the features.
Sure. Got to talk about cost first. I'm going to bring that up. So the existing Window Eyes 5.5 users can upgrade to 6.0 for $150. If you have an SMA, obviously you'll just receive the CD, and that'll just work. The one thing that is unique to this version is that this version will only be supporting now. We've officially dropped support for Windows 95, 98, and Millennium. So we are now only supporting Windows 2000 and above. And so we have some programs to help people that were using the older versions, and maybe they were running the old Windowized standard, which we don't even sell anymore. But if they purchased a Windowized standard, which only worked under 90X, 9X, and Millennium, if they want to convert up, we've actually given out some discounts to help people that will actually offset the cost of updating your operating system to Windows XP. The discount that we provide will offset the cost of upgrading to Windows XP, assuming you have the hardware. So we want to get people up into Windows XP because it's just becoming too difficult for us to constantly maintain support for the older operating systems, with especially with Vista coming out, which is drastically different, and it just became unmanageable for us to constantly maintain that, especially for the dwindling number of users that are still under 9X and Millennium. And even Microsoft, of course, is dropping support for those operating systems. Their applications that are coming out, IE 7, actually doesn't even support 2000. You've got to have XP SP2. Or better, to be able to install IE 7, and Office 2007, of course, doesn't support 9X and things. So we figured this was the time to actually split those ties. We'll still continue to support the 9X users that are using whatever version of Windowize, hopefully 5.5. We'll still support those users in that environment, but they will not be able to upgrade until they actually migrate over into some of the newer operating systems. So we've got some plans and pricings for that. But basically, the upgrade, if you're current today, to go to 6.0 is $150.
Okay. Yeah, it's very interesting. Microsoft just recently announced that XP Service Pack 1 is no longer supported, and it just kind of makes you wonder what's going to happen with XP SP2, especially now that Vista is coming out, which, great transition, what's going to happen with Windowize and this new Windows Vista operating system that's coming out? How will that affect customers?
Vista, what's that? Vista, oh, the scary Vista. We've been working with Microsoft for many years, well before they really started getting serious even writing code on this, which is actually unique. Microsoft in the past pretty much kept us in the dark until, you know, a few months before the release, and then we're left trying to get their operating systems working. So I think they've been burnt enough on that one. So we've been working with them for quite some time, and in fact, when Microsoft does presentations, you'll notice that they're actually, if they're using a screen reader to demo it, they will be using Windowize. They've been using Windowize just because we've been working so closely with them, and it's actually working really well. Now, the kicker is that, of course, Vista is still in beta right now, so it's not been officially released. So we want to release Windowize 6.0 this year. We don't want to wait until whenever Vista actually ships, which has already been postponed several times, but I think finally it will be released sometime early next year. But we want to get out 6.0 today, and so we can't say that 6.0 will support Vista, because we don't know where Vista will be in 3 months when it actually starts shipping to the public. So what we're going to be doing is we've got a ton of code within Windowize 6.0 to be able to support Vista. I mean, we've got obviously people using it, and as I said, Microsoft is showing off Vista with Windowize. So we've obviously got the core components there. We've done the major changeover because there are some dramatic changes within Vista that required us to do some of our very low-level stuff that we haven't had to touch for a long time. And I think for the better. I think in the long term, the way Vista is going is actually going to be much better and much easier to maintain, but we had to take that hit, and we did. So all of that core stuff is there. We've got beta people using it. We've got Microsoft using it, but we don't feel confident enough yet to say that it's done. So what we're going to be doing is shipping 6.0 as it is today and not officially supporting Vista. One thing is that it will require a fresh and actually an updated install to be able to even install under Vista because it's so different. So the 6.0 that you receive will not even install under Vista. Now, we've got people using it. We just don't want to officially say it supports it. So what we will do, though, is that we are going to be providing, and I'm not sure yet if we're going to be calling it a service pack or if we'll call it 6.1 or whatever we're going to call it, we will provide free to 6.0 users whatever it takes to get Vista working when Vista ships. So we'll either provide some sort of upgrade or whatever. It actually will require a CD of some sort. So we'll provide a CD because it will require a new install. That will work with your Vista. So if you get 6.0, you will be able to install when Vista actually ships.
Good, because I know that's been a pretty major concern for users of, you know, wondering, are we going to have to pay for another, you know, like a professional version again, you know, of Windowize or, you know, whatever screen reader they're using.
That's a good point. I mean, we are going to stay. We've dropped the idea of the standard and the professional. We have just one version of Windowize. That's going to support, well, now it's going to support Windows 2000, XP, 2003, and, of course, Vista when that comes out. So one stop for all of those operating systems.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, now, the beta comes out on the 16th, this Monday. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
And so for those who will be upgrading to 6.0, what will the upgrade experience be like for those individuals?
Well, we obviously try to keep the upgrade impact to a minimum. We don't want to disrupt what they're currently doing. We just want to enhance what they're doing, obviously. And so part of the things that we did is hopefully if there were certain stability issues or if you ever had to submit one of our error reporting things, that was, again, as I mentioned earlier, top of our list. So we made sure that any of these error reports that have come to us, we were actually able to resolve those. We made sure that that went in there. So hopefully if you had some of those problems will go away. So that's a positive change, obviously, for you in that case. We also, in order to kind of look at the future, some of the things that we've been doing, we modified a little bit of how we actually associate our set files, our configuration files to some of the applications that you're using. We modified internally how we're doing that. Now, we gave an easy migration. We'll convert your set files up to the new format, but we also twisted a little bit of how the association was there. So you may have to reload some of our factory sets, or if you have some of your custom sets, you may have to reassociate a set file that's there. In order to get that going. But that's a simple process that you can do. And, again, the worst case is a set file may not load that used to load. You can either reload our factory sets. That will clean it up. Or you can just reassociate if it's a custom set that you had done outside of our factory sets. You can do that. But we've also, in order to do that, and we'll talk more in depth about this, but we've got a new set file manager that I think will help people a lot knowing what sets they have installed, if those sets have been modified, if so, what specific files modified. Or even what's even cooler, I think, is that in the past, when we force people to install our factory sets, which is what I basically just told you that you should do, is if they've gone through and taken the time to label some custom graphics, let's say, they've gone through and they've labeled some of the graphics that they have in their custom sets, and they say, oh, great, now Doug's told me to copy over the factory sets, I'm going to lose all my custom dictionaries again. Well, we've heard people saying that's a pain, and it is. So with this new set file manager now, it gives you the ability of either replacing what you have, including all your dictionaries, or you have the choice of individually saying, okay, with the graphic dictionary, merge your, you know, the factory with mine. In other words, leave mine alone if they're already there, but if you've added anything new in your factory, let me have them. The same with the exception dictionary, character dictionary, key label dictionary, color dictionary. All of those can be merged in now as opposed to being able to replace. So again, we try to make that upgrade path much, much easier for you. We're also supporting long file names now. We've also affected the numpad. We've heard from a lot of people that said, you know, I like the idea you use the numpad for a lot of your hotkeys, but if I'm using, let's say, you know, a calculator or whatever, and I turn NumLock on to be able to use the numbers on the keypad, in the past, WindowEyes would still use the slash, the star, the dash, the plus, or whatever for their hotkeys. Because when you turn the NumLock on or off, you hit a slash, you always get a slash. They didn't go one way or the other like the numbers would with some of the other functions. So what we did now also is that we give you the ability to be able to define any one of those five keys, slash, star, dash, plus, or enter, be defined to be only active when the numlock is on or only when the numlock is off or either if the numlock is on or off. And what we did was we took all of our default hotkeys that we had in the past that were either on or off, and we changed it to only be off. So, for instance, the slash is our left mouse click hotkey. That used to be numlock on or off, it would always do a slash. So you calculator users could never divide. So now what we've done is we've defaulted all of those to be numlock on off only. So if you turn your numlock on, it's going to produce a slash. You turn your numlock off, it will produce a left click on the mouse button. So you might notice that as you're using some of those keystrokes. But I think these, again, are all positive steps in the upgrade direction. The only other thing that I'll mention that people might catch when they upgrade, other than all the new features that we'll get into, is if you're using a Handytech Braille display, we've been working real closely with Handytech on this. They've decided to come up with a universal, what they're calling a universal COM interface, that allows actually any product that uses their Braille displays an easy interface that will work with any of their existing displays as well as any future displays. WindowEyes is a little bit unique in that we write our own Braille drivers for all of the Braille displays. And I think, to my recollection, we support more Braille displays than anybody else out there, and we've written them all ourselves. Where a lot of the others depend on all the Braille display manufacturers, they write their drivers. for the other products. We're, you know, we do that ourselves. And what this will actually do is help it tremendously that when a new Braille display comes out, it will just work with this. But the caveat is that we've updated our drivers to only support this new COM interface, which means you need to have this COM interface installed in order for all your HandyTech Braille displays to still work. So if you're using a Braille display from HandyTech and 5.5 is working great with it, you install 6.0, it will break until you install this, this little COM server that, that HandyTech actually supplied. And our README file that will come with WindowEyes will tell you specifically on our webpage of where you can go and download that COM driver so that you can install it. You can have that installed pre-installing 6.0. So if you're a HandyTech Braille user and let's say you're deaf and blind, you don't want to lose your Braille display, what I would suggest is read the README for 6.0 first, find out where you can download this COM server for HandyTech. It's on our webpage. We'll point you to it. Install it with 5.5. It'll coexist. 5.5 will still function fine. Then when you install 6.0, we'll just start using that COM interface, and you'll never, ever be out with your Braille display. So that's what I would recommend you do there. But that's the only gotcha, I think, that, that might catch people is that their HandyTech Braille display might stop. But that doesn't mean we've broken things or are going backwards. It just means that we've updated to this new format, so you need to get that in there. But other than the new features and enhancements, which I hope we'll get into, I think that's probably the most thing that you'll notice when you install this.
Okay, and then the other main difference here is, of course, the install will be very similar to the 5.5 upgrade. You'll be asked a couple of questions and asked whether or not you want to back up your set files, and then you're on your way, right?
Exactly, right. I mean, it puts up some information saying, hey, this is a beta. Now, of course, the final version won't have that, but this is the public beta, so it's not an officially released version yet. This is the public beta, and I want to make sure people realize that. We feel really good about it. We've got private beta testers that have been pounding on it for some time, and I've been hounding them to make sure this is stable when this releases.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to make sure that it's stable. I don't want to lead people to believe that this is going to be really flaky for them, but it is beta, and that's why we're putting it out to you. I think it's unique that WindowEyes gives people this opportunity to be able to play with these before we actually release it, because we want to find the problems. We want to make sure that it's stable and does what we say it's going to do, and not just say, oh, look, hey, board of directors, we made our ship date. What do you think? And then realize all the problems and have to frantically try to fix that. So
right.
We make sure that all works. So it's going to just tell you it's a beta copy. Are you sure? It's going to give you the README to let you read through that. And then it's going to, as Jeff said, say, hey, do you want to back up your existing set files? So in case you do need to revert back to your 5.5, your set files are still untouched in a place that you can get back to them. And then it's just going to go off and do it. It doesn't really need to ask you anything other than that. It'll install it. One reboot, you'll be back up, and you're running 6.0 beta 1.
Now, one other question for those who are in corporate environments and they want to, you know, play with the beta, is it going to be safe for them to use the beta along with maybe, you know, 5.5 installs that are on servers for the remote, desktop support?
That's a good question, because that's also something that makes WindowEyes unique, and I try to express upon people that how our remote access works, that we don't have to have the two versions match up. If you're using remote access, you're using terminal services, you're using a Citrix environment, it doesn't matter what's on the server as long as you had the minimum version that we supported, which I think was, I don't know what we did, 5.0 or 4.5, somewhere in that range we supported Citrix. I think it was 5.0 maybe. I don't remember. But anyway, as long as you have it working now, it doesn't matter what version you're running on the client, as long as it also supports the terminal services or Citrix environment, which 6.0 does. So you can leave 5.0, 5.5, whatever on your server, still run 6.0 on your client, and you're going to be fine. Or vice versa. If your IT guy is really into high tech and wanting the latest and greatest, they could install 6.0 beta 1 on their server. I think they may want to get a different IT guy if he's letting you do that. But he could on the server side, and you could still be running 5.5 on the client side. They don't have to match, and that's one cool thing I think that people miss.
All right, well, let's jump right in here, Doug, and talk all about the new features, and probably the most noticeable one, or at least the one with that I think is probably the, that has a lot of really neat new functionality for WindowEyes users, is your PowerPoint support. So you want to give us an idea of what's here.
Yes, so this was one of the big holes in our Office support that we had at the time, and we knew that. And unfortunately, in our 5.5, we didn't get that in there because we didn't want people that wanted our Excel support, which I think was so phenomenal and still is, we didn't want to hold up a release to those Excel users. So we've got out 5.5 with the Excel support and have gotten nothing but great praise on that. But then we realized, you know, then we heard from the PowerPoint users, I wanted PowerPoint, you told me PowerPoint was going to be there, and I apologized to those users. But the best I can do is say, I think you will really enjoy 6.0. I think you will appreciate that we took the time to do this, and again, just didn't meet some deadline and just kind of half-heartedly put it in there, and so our marketing guys could have a field day. We did it right, and that's what I would say true with all of the features that we're going to be going through. We did it right. We didn't just get that out there so we can get that income from those upgrades or whatever. And our PowerPoint support, I will let it speak for itself when you actually install it and start using it. But, you know, we looked at what was out there, obviously. I want to see what's currently out there, but then I want to say, how can we do better? And in a lot of areas, there was a lot of room for improvement that we decided to capitalize on. So whether you're creating a PowerPoint presentation from scratch, which I would say a blind user can certainly do, you can use Windowize to create that and have confidence that it will look good when it actually displays. Or if you just need to read one, or you just need to give a presentation but not actually create it, absolutely, you have full power over that as well. So going in and editing all of that, you get all of this information. And the nice thing is just like our Word support and our Excel support, is we're talking directly to PowerPoint as much as we possibly can. Whatever that can provide to us, we're using. And this is the DOM, or the document object model, that you've probably heard us talking about with Word and Excel. Well, we do the same with PowerPoint. So what some of the other screen readers will do is they'll use their off-screen model, which is, you know, their mapping of what they think is on the screen, which obviously has an OSM as well, off-screen model. No screen reader has their OSM or their off-screen model always 100% accurate. So instead of having to refresh the screen all the time to get the off-screen model into sync and then hope that you're getting the right attributes, you know, the right font size and things, a lot of times the larger fonts can cause you problems and things like that, we're going directly to the DOM, or the document object model, talking directly to PowerPoint to be able to get that text that's on that slide or whatever, whether I'm in the outline pane, whether I'm in the slide pane, whatever, while we get that text, whatever you read, you can be 100% sure that that's 100% accurate. Because, again, we're getting that text directly from them. And I think that's unique with all the screen readers that are out there, is that we can get that. And, again, even if you're in the outline pane, and a cool way you can demo this and show that Windowize is the only screen reader that does this, is when you're in the outline pane, visually the text that you're seeing in the outline pane doesn't contain any attributes. So if on your slide you have a word that's bolded, for instance, well, when the slide plays back or you're in the slide pane, any screen reader can tell you that, because that's, you know, if their OSM is in good shape, it can tell you that that word is bolded. But when you're in the outline pane and you're just kind of going up and down through the text, visually it's not bolded. But with Windowize, we tell you that information. And the reason we do is because we're going directly to PowerPoint and able to get the attribute information even though it's not on the screen. So the outline pane can also be used to get all of that formatting information and, again, be able to give you 100% confidence that it's going to look right, even if you don't have somebody sighted having to proof that slideshow before you actually give it. So that, I think, is unique in that respect. And when you're playing back, you have all the power of our browse mode. So just like if you're reading web pages or help text or PDF files, things like that, where you're in our browse mode, you have that functionality while you're playing back as well. So obviously, if you're a Braille user, you're going to get that information. We have lots of verbosity that we've added specifically for PowerPoint, both when you're creating a document or when you're playing it back. But do you want to know things about effects? So if you're playing a slide presentation back, do you want to know that this line was animated by coming on or animated going off or did something like twist on the screen while it was playing? You have that ability through verbosity to let you know while you're giving the presentation if these attributes or these animations are actually there. And then also if you and the creator of the presentations have the ability of giving each slide individual notes. So on this slide I can give notes that pertains to that particular slide. So when I'm giving the presentation, the audience doesn't see these notes, but I see them to remind me to say something. Well, if you haven't printed out something or brailled it out, you don't have those notes. Well, with Windowize, you have the ability, again through verbosity, that says if there are notes in this, go ahead and put it in my browse buffer, and we put it actually at the end of the slide content, and we put a little header in there so that you can actually hit H to just boom, go right down to your slide notes, because it's a header. We tagged it that way. And then you can just down arrow through those notes that you have for that particular slide. So you can still read those without having to have some Braille printed off ahead of time or whatever within that slide presentation. So all of that stuff is definable, and you can just, you know, if you know browse mode, you can do that. And then on the creation, you know, I said that you don't need to have a sighted person take a look at your presentation. And the reason that you don't is because we give you all of the formatting information, all of the layout information of where all this stuff is going to be placed on the slide. So as you're moving these objects around that might have text or might have graphics or whatever, we can tell you the size of these objects. And if it happens to be overlapping another object, we'll tell you. That's the most common error that a blind person might make, is they put all of these objects on the slide, but if you don't know that they're aligned correctly or one might be on top of the other, you don't have a clue that one was just covered and isn't going to be visible to your sighted audience. So we can tell you that it's been covered. Or if an object slightly goes off the screen, we'll tell you what edge it's gone off and how far and all of this type of thing as you're moving objects around. So we give you all of that information that, you know, if you ask your sighted person to come in, that's what they're going to tell you. Well, that's what we give you with speech and or Braille. Through all these verbosity options that you want to be able to play with. So I think we've covered all of the bases and all the major areas within PowerPoint for both creating and playing back that you can do with 100% confidence with WindowEyes.
Well, that's great. Now, what versions of PowerPoint will this affect?
We still support, on all of our Office products, we still support Office 2000 all the way up. And by all the way up, I mean Office 2000, Office XP, which some call 2002, Office 2003, and which we will ultimately get into, I hope to talk about, is Office 2007. So when Office 2007 comes out, everything I just described here will work with that as well.
Okay, great. So this is really exciting because on occasion I have to do presentations, not very often, but sometimes I do, and I sometimes I have to do presentations on material that I don't even produce, which is all really kind of interesting. And a lot of it is really being produced more and more in PowerPoint. And really, this is phenomenal for people that both have to create and to actually, you know, do some presentations on, you know, material that's not even produced by them. So
a lot of people were complaining to us because they were given the PowerPoint presentation just to review or whatever. You know,
right.
They're not going to give the presentation. They didn't create it, but they still needed to read it. And they would have to convert it to HTML or to a Word document or something, which you could do. But now you can actually go back and do it right in PowerPoint.
And it doesn't look like it's really going to require any, you know, special tagging or anything like that either, to be able to get it to be, you know, as accessible as it should be for someone to be able to review it.
Right, right. I mean, nothing's more frustrating than saying, okay, to make this accessible, you got to make sure you tag it this way, tag it that way. Well, that might be great for those five people that, you know, do that, but no, you don't have to do anything special. It's just going to work no matter how you create that document.
I already have a blank PowerPoint presentation open on my screen. There are four different panes: the slide pane, the task pane, the notes pane, and the thumbnails pane. By default, you are put into the slide pane. This is where you can edit your slide. I'll press tab to get to the first area to edit.
Center title placeholder. 8.5 inches wide by 1.61 inches high, 0.75 inches room left, 2.33 inches room top.
You heard that this object is a title placeholder. Visually, it is the title of the slide with a large font size. WindowEyes also told you the position of the object relative to the slide. If you wanted to move the position of the object, you can use any of the dedicated arrow keys. I'll push the left arrow so you can hear what WindowEyes will say.
Center title. 0.67 inches room left.
You heard the new position of the object. Now that you know where the object is, let's place some text in it. I'll type screen reader presentation. First, I have to press enter. You'll hear edit object, and then I'll type in the text.
Edit object. S C R E E N space R E A D E R space P R E S E N T A T I O N.
Once I'm done, I'll press the escape key.
Center title placeholder. Screen reader presentation. 8.5 inches wide by 1.61 inches high, 0.67 inches room left, 2.33 inches room top.
This time, you heard the same information as before, but you also heard the text that I typed in. Let's tab to the next object.
Subtitle placeholder. 7 inches wide by 1.92 inches high, 1.5 inches room left, 4.25 inches room top.
Again, I'm going to edit this text and type in WindowEyes is the greatest.
Edit object. WindowEyes space IS space TAE space GREATESTRANG. Subtitle placeholder. Window eyes is the greatest. 7 inches wide by 1.92 inches high, 1.5 inches room left, 4.25 inches room top.
Okay, this is all of the information I want to place on this slide. To move to the next pane, which is the task pane, I'll press F6.
Microsoft Office Online. Grouping object.
It is possible to close the task pane on startup of PowerPoint in the Tools menu under Options. You can press the Tab key to get around to various parts of the pane. I'll tab to a few of them so you can hear what links are available.
Link. Connect to Microsoft Office Online. Link. Get the latest news about using PowerPoint.
As you can tell, this task pane is similar to the pane in Word and Excel. It could be very useful to get help regarding PowerPoint. I'll press F6 again to get to the Notes pane.
Menu closed. Notes pane.
You heard. Notes pane. The Notes pane is where you can put notes about your slide. These are notes that you do not want other people to see while giving your presentation. They can be whatever you want. Typically, they are information about the slide that you need to remember. I'll type in, notes are a great way to remember important stuff.
N-O-T-E-S space A-R-E space A space G-R-E-A-T space W-A-Y space T-O space R-E-M-E-M-B-E-R space I-M-P-O-R T-A-N-T space S-T-U-F-F Rang.
Later, when we start the presentation, WindowEyes will read back the information in the Notes pane to us. Or, you can use WindowEyes keys, like numpad center, to read the current line, just like in a word processor.
Notes are a great way to remember important stuff.
This is pretty much all there is to the Notes pane. Again, I need to press F6 to get to the Thumbnails pane.
Thumbnails pane. Slide 1 of 1 screen reader presentation.
Part of what you heard was Thumbnails pane and screen reader presentation. Note that you did not hear the entire slide. You only hear the title in this pane. Suppose you want to view the contents of the slide in the Thumbnails pane. You can press Ctrl-Shift-Tab in order to do this.
Outline pane.
This is the outline pane. By default, the entire slide is selected. To move the PC cursor to the top of the slide, press the up arrow.
Screen reader.
Now, you can down arrow to hear the information on the slide.
Presentation. WindowEyes is the greatest.
This is very useful to review a presentation before going through the slideshow. Let's suppose you want to add a new slide. The PowerPoint command is Control-M.
Slide 2 of 2.
You heard slide 2 of 2, and the new slide was inserted. I could press F6 again and rotor back to the slide pane to edit the new slide. But let's keep moving forward to the other great features that WindowEyes offers in PowerPoint. A great feature that we have added in PowerPoint is the page navigation dialog. If you use Word, Excel, or the Internet, you are probably already familiar with the concept of the page navigation dialog. Just as in other applications, you can press Insert Tab to open it.
Dialog. Two slides. Slides entire presentation S. Screen reader presentation slide 1. 1 of 2. List box.
The page navigation dialog gives you the ability to list hyperlinks, objects, comments, or slides. For any of these items, you can select to list them for either the entire presentation or just the current slide. Since I don't have any hyperlinks, comments, or objects, I can only list slides. So you heard the title of the first slide, and that it was slide 1. I was on slide 2 when we left, so I'll press Enter on slide 1 to navigate there.
Microsoft PowerPoint Presentation 1. Slide pane. Slide 1 of 2 screen reader presentation.
Now, I am in slide 1, and we are automatically placed directly into the slide pane. See how easy WindowEyes is making PowerPoint navigation? Now, let's move on to the slideshow. The slideshow is where the entire presentation will be displayed on the screen. Once you have finished all of your slides, this is how you will display the presentation to a group of people. The PowerPoint hotkey to start the slideshow is F5.
PowerPoint slideshow presentation 1. One heading. Slide 1 of 2 has notes. Screen reader presentation WindowEyes is the greatest. Slide notes. Notes are a great way to remember important stuff. Bottom.
WindowEyes automatically goes into browse mode for the presentation. As you can tell, WindowEyes reads all of the information on the slide to us, including the notes. If you want to move around the screen, you can do so just like when using browse mode on the Internet. You can even move directly to your notes by pressing the letter H, since the notes are a heading in browse mode.
Heading. Slide notes.
Thus, I just move directly to the notes I made, and I could use the down arrow to move through the notes to read them. It is important for you to know that there is no cursor while in the slideshow, so you cannot edit a slide while in a presentation. To move to the next slide, press space.
Space. Slide 2 of 2 button.
If you want to move to the previous slide, press backspace.
One heading. Slide notes. Notes are a great way to remember important stuff. Button.
And if you want to exit the slideshow, just press escape.
Microsoft PowerPoint Presentation 1. Slide pane. Screen reader presentation.
We have also added new verbosity options for PowerPoint that will allow you to adjust what you hear during playback of the slideshow or while you are in the slide pane. For example, one of the options will allow you to have WindowEyes not read the notes of the slide during the slideshow.
Well, one of the other Office applications that I personally probably live in most, and what I don't know if that's good or bad, but it's just a reality of life, is Outlook. And I know that you guys have done a lot of work in Outlook and Outlook Express. And I'd like to first focus on the calendar inside of Microsoft Outlook. And I know that there's a revolutionary new Outlook calendar support built into WindowEyes version 6. Can you tell us all about it?
Yes, this is one of the most exciting things I think that we've got in 6.0. But one of the things that I say that we have a great relationship with Microsoft, and we do, and especially in Office 2007, which we'll be getting into, we've done some really cool things with them. The frustration is that we still got a lot of legacy code within Office. And unfortunately, that legacy code wasn't always accessible. And case in point is the Outlook calendar. The UI, or the user interface, with Outlook calendar is, in my opinion, sorry Microsoft, pathetic for accessibility. For a sighted user, it's okay. But for a blind user, it just isn't a good interface. But we've worked with a lot of applications that didn't have a good interface. They usually have another under-the-hood type of interface that screen readers can get into, called the document object model or MSAA or techniques like that we could get in and use it. Well, unfortunately with Outlook Calendar, we've got all this legacy stuff that's all pre-MSAA. I think Microsoft actually purchased PowerPoint from some other company or something, and I don't think it didn't have the normal DOM support that their other Office products have. It had no way to get into the interface. And I know some of the other screen readers, they'll try to go out there and use their OSM and hack and assume these things are here and that's there and go off and try to get really cute on the times that you're on. And I was getting so much misinformation. Again, I looked to see what's out there, and I was using some other products, and it was telling me I had appointments for days that didn't have appointments, and it was telling me I was on a time that I wasn't on, and it was just giving me all this misinformation. And so I thought, instead of trying to fight this battle, which we're never going to win, of trying to hack around their user interface that's so poorly done, which I've been yelling at Microsoft about over and over and over, and unfortunately they're saying that it didn't make Office 2007, which it didn't, to be able to enhance that. But they are, we have serious talks that actually, and I asked them to wait until we release 6.0, but I want to sit down with them and say, this is what you really need to do to make this accessible. So post-2007, I think they might do it right. But what we did, because we had to work with today's stuff from 2000 all the way up to 2007 even, which isn't even released yet, is come up with what I believe is a more accessible interface. We couldn't do it with the Outlook calendars interface, so we decided to create our own dialogue. Now, the DOM support for Outlook calendar is good enough that we can go off and get information. We just couldn't correlate it with their existing user interface. So if I'm in their interface and I'm going from day to day, there was no way for me to tell what day was highlighted in their interface, so we could then go to the DOM and say, okay, tell me how many appointments and all that. That just wasn't there. So we decided to give up on that interface and create our own. So we now added a new hotkey in WindowEyes, Insert C, that will pop up our dialogue. So no matter where you're at, what you're doing, doesn't matter, as long as Outlook is running somewhere, but it can be minimized on the taskbar, of course. But no matter where you are, you can press Insert C, and WindowEyes will bring up the WindowEyes Outlook calendar, which is a dialogue specifically designed for the Outlook calendar. It's a very sophisticated yet simple dialogue, but it gives you all the interface that their UI doesn't. And because it was designed for blind users, I think it makes it actually much more accessible, even if we were able to make their user interface accessible. Because, again, their interface was designed for a sighted environment that we would have to try to retro for a blind user. where now we've created an environment that is optimized for a blind user in this respect. So it just brings up a dialogue with a list view of all the appointments that are for whatever range that you've selected. We have radio buttons in there to allow you to select the current, you know, a day, all the appointments in a particular day, in a work week, in a week, in a year, in a month, or a custom range where you can actually go in and say, show me everything between two dates, and it will show you that. And we still talk to Outlook as far as like what a work week is, or even what a week is. We can go off and query Outlook for how you've defined what those are, or what a work day is. You know, maybe you only work from 8 to 5, and we can go to Outlook and get that information to be able to represent it using that. We can also go to Outlook and say, okay, what calendars are you actually looking at? Because I can be looking at just my calendar. I can be looking at several Exchange calendars. I can have several calendars open at one time in Outlook. So we actually look to see what calendars you have open in Outlook, and that's the data that we're going to be pulling from, whether it's an Exchange calendar, whether it's, you know, your five coworkers' Exchange calendars that they're sharing. Doesn't matter. We'll pull all that data in and represent it in this dialogue.
Doug,
and then we even go above and beyond what Outlook can do. We have like features that there's a checkbox in our dialogue that says, show me available times. So not only will we show you the appointments in the range that you selected, but given the information that you've configured Outlook for of what your workday consists of, the hours, we can go there in that list view and actually create an entry for all your free times. So if you've got an appointment, let's say, in the middle of your workday, we'll tell you the beginning of the day you have free time from, let's say, 8 to 11, and then 11 to 12 is your appointment, and then we can tell you from 1 to 5, because we left out lunch, is free time as well. And so you can then see all your free time that you have in a day very easily in this list view. And then, of course, you can either go to one of those entries that are free and just say new, and it will open up the Outlook calendar to create a new appointment. The Outlook calendar to create an appointment is actually accessible. So we just open that up, just like you would if you were using their UI. Type in, you know, all your information. It will default to the day and the time of that free time that you had. Put all your data in and save it, and boom, our calendar, our dialogue is still there. You'll come back to our dialogue, and you'll see that the list view has now been updated to the data that you just entered. You can select an appointment, and you can hit enter to open it, and it will again open up the same dialogue within Outlook to see all the details that you want to, or to make a change in that particular appointment if you need to change a time or whatever. You hit save that and come back again to our dialogue, and you'll see that it's already been updated. You can delete appointments right from our list view. You can just hit the delete key, and boom, that appointment's been deleted. We handle reoccurring appointments. Everything that you can do in that calendar can be done directly within our dialogue as you're working with it. So it's very easy to just go through all of the appointments in whatever range you want. If you're on a day, you can just say go next day, next day, next day. If you're a week, next week, next week. Year, you can't even see a year within Outlook's view and things like that. So it's got a tremendous amount of power in there to easily get to all the data, but I think in a much more accessible and blind-friendly way.
Now, for those people who are, you know, managers, for example, and they need to look at their coworkers' calendars, that's not going to be a problem either then, right?
Correct. Right. As long as it's a shared calendar that you had access to begin with, then absolutely you can just you can say, hey, I want to look at, you know, Jim Jones's calendar. You would go into Outlook's UI to do that, which is fully accessible to be able to select the calendars you want. And
okay.
That's probably going to come off an Exchange server someplace.
Right.
But that's no problem. You do that, and visually it'll probably pop up in the UI of Outlook, which isn't very accessible. But then you just Alt-Tab back to or hit our hotkey Insert C. And boom, our list view will automatically update. It will realize that you've changed something from under it, and it will automatically update to all the new data depending on the calendars and things that you have open.
Okay, so the important thing to remember for those of us that do use shared calendars is to make sure that you do set focus inside of Outlook to the calendar you want to view, correct?
Correct, right.
Okay.
Now, eventually, you know, we thought about what about putting UI within our dialogue to allow you to select the calendars? And I think we'll probably do that at some point. But for now, you can use the Outlook UI to do that. It is very simple, and that is actually accessible to be able to select the calendars that you want. One thing I forgot in our dialogue, too, is, you know, I mentioned you can hit enter to open up any one of the appointments and see the data within Outlook's dialogue. But we also have a big edit box. It's a read-only edit box that you can tab to or hit the shortcut that will go into it and actually give you all the main data for that particular appointment right in our dialogue. So you don't have to open up another dialogue to go look at the data. You can just tab down. It will tell you where the meeting is at, so, you know, the location of the meeting, who it's with, the time, the exact, you know, all that data is within our edit box there.
Right, and then you can even, you know, copy it to the clipboard and...
Right, absolutely, yeah. All that stuff is
yeah.
just a read-only edit box. You've
right,
got a cursor,
so you just,
and you can copy and you know, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, exactly. You can put it in, you know, do an email message or, you know, copy the notes out. And because I don't know about you, but doing it inside of Outlook can be tedious at best.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean,
yeah.
it's really designed for a click-and-point type of environment.
Exactly.
Which, you know, that's what it's designed for. But if you can't do that, then it was not very optimal. And now I think it is extremely optimal and very... very easy for a blind user to get in there and effectively use their calendar finally.
I have Outlook 2003 running in the background, and my active application is Mozilla Firefox. You can tell that I'm on the GW Micro webpage, so I arrow down through the content.
Link Skip to Main Content. Link Window Eyes. Link RailSense. Link Small Talk Ultra. Link Sense View.
Because the Window Eyes Outlook calendar is available any time that Outlook is running in any application, I can press Insert C even while in browse mode in Firefox to bring up the Window Eyes Outlook calendar dialog. You may recall Insert C as being the auto-detect cursor hotkey in previous versions of Window Eyes. The auto-detect cursor hotkey has been redefined as Control Insert C in Window Eyes 6.0 to free up Insert C as a more intuitive hotkey for the Window Eyes Outlook calendar. I'm going to go ahead and press Insert C to bring up the Window Eyes Outlook calendar dialog.
Tuesday 10-10-2006, 1 appointment by day P. Tuesday. Date. 10-10-2006. Start time. 4:00 p.m. Subject. Meeting with Dan and Doug. Location. Dan's office. 1:01. List view. Dialog. Window Eyes Outlook calendar.
The Window Eyes Outlook calendar lists all appointments for a selected time span. I have the day time span selected, so my appointments list contains all the appointments I have scheduled for the selected day, in this case today. Let's take a quick look at the layout of the Window Eyes Outlook calendar dialog.
Read only. Edit box. Details L. Start Tuesday, October 10, 2006, 4:00 p.m. End 4:30 p.m. Duration 30 minutes. Subject meeting with Dan and Doug. Location Dan's office.
The Details Read-Only Edit box displays information pertaining to the currently selected appointment. If you've entered information about the appointment, such as contact information for the person you're meeting, you don't have to open the entire appointment just to read your notes.
Time span. Day D. Radio button. Checked. 1:06.
The Time Span group allows me to choose whether I want to view appointments in free time by day, work week, week, month, year, or a custom date range. You can specify exactly what days a week and work week contain in Outlook, and the Window Eyes Outlook calendar will reflect those settings.
Display. Show appointments. Checkbox. Checked.
I can choose to show or hide appointments. Window Eyes gives you the power and flexibility to show only the items you're interested in without having to navigate through an entire 24-hour time period just to find an appointment.
Display. Show available times key. Checkbox. Unchecked.
I can choose to show or hide available and free time. The Window Eyes not only lets you hear what free time is available, but also automatically recalculates free time when you add a new appointment.
Previously button.
The previous button allows me to move to the previous time span. Since I have the day time span selected, pressing the previous button would take me to the previous day. If I had the week time span selected, the previous button would take me to the previous week.
Current R button.
If I had used the previous button to navigate several days prior to today, and I wanted to jump quickly back to today's appointments, I could select the current button.
Next text button.
The next button allows me to move to the next time span. Since I have the day time span selected, pressing the next button would take me to the next day. If I had the week time span selected, the next button would take me to the next week.
New N button.
The new button will cause Outlook to open the Create New Appointment dialog for the day and time selected in the appointments list. No longer do you have to open a new appointment and then set all of the dates and times. Just select an area of free time in the appointments list, select the new button, and Window Eyes will fill in the appropriate date and time fields for you.
Open O button.
If I select the Open button, Outlook will open the properties for the selected appointment in the appointments list.
Delete E button.
The Delete button allows me to quickly remove the selected appointment in the appointments list. I could also use the Delete key in the appointments list.
Close button.
The Window Eyes Outlook calendar dialog will stay open until I choose to close it, which I could do by using the Close button, or by pressing Escape, or by Alt F4. There are a few other controls in the WindowEyes Outlook calendar dialog, such as the custom start and end dates, as well as a checkbox for compact mode. The custom date edit boxes are only enabled when the custom time span is selected. The compact checkbox is only enabled for time spans other than day. The compact feature is a very handy way to get a quick glance at the number of appointments scheduled for a selected time span. For example, with the week time span selected, pressing the compact checkbox will cause all the appointments for the week to be collapsed into single days. Unchecking the compact checkbox causes all the appointments to be expanded into individual entries in the appointments list view. Let's take a look at the available times feature. With available times unchecked, only the appointments I have scheduled will show up in the appointments list. For example, I have one appointment scheduled for today.
P. Tuesday 10-10-2006, one appointment by day. P. Tuesday. Date. 10-10-2006. Start time. 4:00 p.m. Subject. Meeting with Dan and Doug. Location. Dan's office. 1 of 1. List view.
If I check the available times checkbox using the shortcut Alt-T, both my appointment and available time will show up in the appointments list view.
T. Display. Show available times T. Checkbox. Checked.
Now, if I access my list of appointments, I'll hear
P. Tuesday 10-10-2006, one appointment by day. P. Tuesday. Date. 10-10-2006. Start time. 4:00 p.m. Subject. Meeting with Dan and Doug. Location. Dan's office. 2 of 3. List view.
WindowEyes now tells me 2 of 3, meaning there are two other entries in my appointments list. The first entry is the available time before my meeting with Dan and Doug.
Tuesday. Date. 10-10-2006. Start time. 8:00 a.m. Subject. 8 hours available. 1 of 3.
The third entry is the available time after my meeting.
Tuesday. Date. 10-10-2006. Start time. 4:30 p.m. Subject. 30 minutes available. 3 of 3.
The feature of showing or hiding available time means you have the power to be more productive and more efficient. If you just want to view the appointment scheduled, you can do so. If you just want to be able to view free time, you can do so. If you want to view both, guess what? WindowEyes gives you the power to display exactly what you want.
Well, now, in Outlook and Outlook Express, there are a number of new hotkeys that have been added, and was wondering if you might want to talk to us about that.
Sure. Well, the calendar obviously was the biggest thing, so we knew we had to go over there. But we were also hearing from people, even though our email support was okay, we knew there was room for improvement there. And the biggest part of that is when you're reading an email message, it wasn't so easy to say, now, who is that from again, to read the from field, or who am I sending this to again if you're creating an email message, or when was this particular sent, or are there attachments, and all of that was still tedious at best to get to. So we heard people out there. And so what we did now is we actually added 8 new hotkeys, whether you're using Outlook Express or you're using Outlook's Mail, either one of those two. These hotkeys are in effect all the time. And basically they're 8 hotkeys that allow you to get instant access to being able to read the to field, the from field, the CC, BCC, any status message that might be up there. Outlook likes to put a little line of status that might have something like, hey, we removed an attachment because we thought there was a virus or something. I don't remember what I said, but attachments, the date, all of that stuff. There's 8 of those different things. And each one of these is mapped specifically to that field. So, like, Alt-1 is from. So I can hit Alt-1, and I know that's going to read the from. If there is no from, which I can't believe there wouldn't be, WindowEyes would say from not found. I can hit Alt-7, for instance, to read the attachments. If I hit Alt-7 one time, it will read me the attachments. If there are no attachments, it will say attachments not found. So I can really easily do that. And it's not like I've seen some of the others out there. What they do is they give you hotkeys to read header 1, header 2, header 3. Well, if I have BCC on or off, then the headers shift, and you don't necessarily know which number is which. And so you'll get there eventually, but ours are mapped specifically to these all the time. And if they're not present, we'll tell you it's not present.
Now, one of the other features, Doug, about these hotkeys is hitting them twice will allow you to actually get focus to them as well.
Absolutely, yeah. We didn't want to have 2 sets of hotkeys to do both reading and focusing. So what we did was the first press will read it, and the second press, if you don't do anything else in between the two presses, the second press will actually put focus on that field if it's focusable, like the status line isn't focusable.
Right.
For instance. But the second press will put focus right in there as if the sighted user took their mouse and clicked in that field. Excuse me. So then, once focus is there, you can move around within that. So it's a great way to get to your attachments and things. So that was the next step. But then we realized, okay, there's still a little problem with Windowize. When you get into these fields, and the way Outlook handles even an email address, once it realizes that it's an email address, it turns it into more like an object as opposed to, like mine is doug@gwmicro.com. Well, once it realizes it's that, it actually kind of like underlines my email address and turns it into an object, which is like one unit as opposed to all the individual letters. So when you try to cursor through that again, you can't go through the individual letters.
Right.
You actually go through the entire object as your left and right arrow. And so Windowize wasn't reading that so well. So now we know how to handle that in these particular controls, which are actually just standard rich edit controls. And so now when you cursor left and right, if you're moving by an object, we'll read you that object, which is great for attachments. If you go into the attachment field and you want to make sure you're on the, you know, you get five attachments, you can left or right arrow through those, and Windowize will just read them happily as you're going across. And when you're on the one you want, you can bring up the context menu, and you can say save it or open it or whatever you want to be able to do as you do that. So I think we cleaned up all of that stuff, so it's just seamless now as you're reading your email.
Windowize 6.0 Beta 1 will provide you with quick access to status information from date to CC, BCC, subject, and attachment fields. How will this make you more productive? Suppose you are reading the body of an email message and for some reason you just can't remember who the email was from. Simply press Alt-1 to hear who the message was from.
From bubba@gwmicro.com.
As you can tell, this was from Bubba. His email address is bubba@gwmicro.com. Or maybe you need to quickly know when the email was sent. Press Alt-2 to hear the date the message was sent.
Sent. Web 10/11/2006, 3:14 p.m.
With the power of Windowize, you are now able to read the information quickly without having to move to those items. What an excellent way to speed up reading email and making you more productive. And you can do this for any of the items mentioned above. If you want to know all of the hotkeys, they are as follows. Alt-1 reads the from information. Alt-2 reads the date sent. Alt-3 reads the to field. Alt-4 reads CC. Alt-5 reads BCC. Alt-6 reads the subject. Alt-7 reads attachment. And Alt-8 reads the status. And regardless if you're using Outlook or Outlook Express, all of these hotkeys are the same. Note that if a header does not exist, you will be told. For example, if no one is CC'd on a message, you'll hear CC not found. Not only can you read the information quickly, but you can also use the same keys to navigate there quickly. For example, I'll press Alt-7 once to read the attachments and then a second time to access them.
Attachments. readme.htm2kb. Read only. Rich edit. Attachments. readme.htm2kb.
If I had two attachments, I could arrow through them, but since I only have one, I can now open the context menu in order to save or open the attachment.
Context menu. Open O. Print R. Save as. S dialog.
So, if I wanted to perform these functions, I would simply press Enter.
Can you tell us about Office 2007 and what we're going to be looking forward to here?
Sure. 2007 is a drastic change from the normal user interface that people have seen in any application. I don't mean Office, any application. This is kind of a major shift. I'm not exactly sure why. When I first saw this visually, I was put off by it. I was saying, I can't find anything, whatever. But I think that was just that initial change. I don't like change so much. So I, as I've gotten used to it, I actually prefer it the way that they've laid this out. But it's supposed to make it so that, and I agree with them now after I've used it for a while, that you can actually find things faster using this ribbon. In the past, there were dialogues all over the place, of course, and you had to know which menu option to get to which dialogue and then which tab control of that dialogue, and it was very hard. So they put this all up in this big ribbon up there. And if anybody was at last year's CSUN, Microsoft gave a presentation at that in L.A., and I was actually co-presenting with them, and I showed a very early version of Windowize running with Office 2007 there as well. So, again, that shows the close relationship that we've been working with Microsoft on this. And it's been actually extremely rewarding working with them because this ribbon interface is kind of basically totally separate from the Office components themselves, Word, Excel, PowerPoint. It's just kind of added on top of all of those components. And the group that's creating this ribbon is extremely into accessibility. They had several people come to CSUN that were there. They saw my presentation. They saw me showing this stuff, and they just got really excited about it and wanted to work, you know, even more with us than they were. I was actually out at Microsoft campus for something else, and they wanted me to come over, and I gave a talk to the not the entire, but a big number of the office group came there, probably 100 people that came from the office group to see what we've been doing and the problems that we've been having, both with office in general, but even with the ribbon. And so they actually made this thing accessible from the ground up. Now, just because it's accessible doesn't mean it's just going to magically start working with your screen reader. Because it's a very complex control that even MSAA doesn't have what it takes to really bring this out of the box. Now, they're using MSAA to do this, but out of the box, it's difficult just because it is so complex. So we've been working with them to come up with the best interface that they can so we can expose all of these elements that they've got. Because of the way that the ribbon is organized and being able to navigate through the ribbon and all these groups within the ribbon, and they have these new controls called gallery controls, which are basically kind of a composite of several type of list boxes and menu items and several different types of controls in what used to be considered like a pull-down type menu. They call these gallery controls. And so we can give you all of this information now and be able to intelligently speak this, give you index counts. So in my opinion, the interface to this is much better than what's been out there, accessibility-wise especially, because we can read this to you. They've given shortcuts to all of these keystrokes. WindowEyes can read that. They give you detailed information about each of these controls. So when you're in the ribbon and you're moving around from component to component, we'll speak these elements to you. We'll say what the shortcuts are if you have our verbosity on to do that. But if you do our speak summary, which is Control-Shift-S, for instance, we'll go off and read the extended information about this particular control, which they've labeled. The only reason they labeled it was for MSAA, for accessibility, but we can expose that information to you as you do that. So we've got the entire ribbon working beautifully, and the nice thing is once it works, it's going to work on all the components that use it. So even if Microsoft, you know, so that means Word, Excel, PowerPoint, they're all using it, that all just comes for free now, just all works. And if they integrate this ribbon into other Microsoft products, which I sense they probably will, I don't know for sure, but that's just going to work. I mean, they've got this working. They made sure that it remained accessible. You know, we've had great relationship with their testing team. They've been testing with WindowEyes there. This stuff just works. So that's the new ribbon interface. And then, of course, the main components themselves, as I mentioned, are separate from the ribbon, but they have made minor changes within some of the applications, which caused us a little bit of a headache in some cases. So we had to, again, go back and work with those particular product groups to get those things working. But we've got Word working just as well as we do with Word 2000, XP, and 2003. Excel the same way. One of the things with Excel is they actually made the spreadsheet wider now. I forget what it is, but you can go incredibly number of columns and incredibly number of rows. That caused us a little hiccup there, but we've got that worked out. PowerPoint is working well. There's one little glitch that I hope they get cleaned up in PowerPoint, but for the most part, all of that stuff is working really well. You can certainly create a document. You can certainly play it back the same way. You wouldn't even know you're in 2007 in those cases when you're doing that. And then in Outlook, they've actually done something a little bit different with Outlook. If you remember Outlook in the past, pre-2007, you could actually create an email message using Word or what they call rich text, plain text, HTML text. I mean, it became very complicated to know what editor you're using. And if it was HTML, you'd be using Browse Mode of WindowEyes. You might be using the Word support if you've got that, or you might just be using the built-in Outlook rich edit type control to be able to read through it. And it was very confusing for a user to be able to navigate through all of these particular different types of editors that you might be using while reading or writing. What they did with 2007 is condense all of that into one editor, whether you're creating or reading, and that one editor is always Word. So the beauty of that is you get the power of Word. All that Word support that we've done way back in 5.0 just comes for free, basically, with Outlook. So when you're reading an email, when you're creating an email message, you have all of that functionality that you would have if you were just running Word, and it's just one editor to have to deal with, as opposed to, again, all the other stuff that's out there. So, you know, there were some last-minute problems with that, and there's still some things that we want to clean up on, but they got the major things done, and they actually, which was my surprise, we found a major, major problem in Outlook. I don't know if I'm supposed to say all of this stuff, but right before they had kind of the cutoff, we found a major, major problem. And back in the old days, Microsoft would have just said, nope, sorry, code freeze, too late, can't change it, you got to wait for a service pack or whatever. But we impressed on them that this was basically a showstopper for blind people, and they actually put the fix in last minute. And this was not a, you know, just a simple little change. This was a hairy little thing they put in. So I think that shows that Microsoft is really starting to take, at least the Office group, is really starting to take accessibility serious, because they did put that in. It then opened up Outlook, and we're now able to use that. So that's Office 2007 in a nutshell. But I think it will be a positive experience. WindowWise is going to work with it, whether you're running 2003, XP, 2000, 2007. You really won't notice much difference other than that new ribbon interface.
Yeah, should be really interesting. I think the ribbon bar will take some getting used to, not only for blind people, but for sighted people, too.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah. It really does. But I think once you learn it, you'll realize that, hey, I don't have all these 50,000 other dialogues that I had to remember where all they were. Some of those dialogues weren't even that accessible, where this ribbon just works. There's still some of the old legacy dialogues there that the ribbon will actually allow you to get to. But for the most part, everything you need is right in that ribbon and grouped in a nice, meaningful way so you can find something that you don't use very often much quicker.
I'm going to open Word 2007 just like I typically open Word 2003.
Start menu. R. Dialogue. Run. Combo. Edit box. Open O. Outlook. 1 of 18. W-I-N-W-O-R-D. Desktop. Microsoft Word. App starting. Section 1 of 1. Style normal. Page 1 of 1. Column 1 of 1. Print layout. Document 1.
There's a new concept in Word 2007. Gone are the days of the menu at the top of the screen. Now, a new and easier way has been developed to access the same great features you have come to know and expect from Word. Instead of a menu system, there is now a ribbon across the top of the screen. Instead of a menu opening up vertically on the screen when you open a menu, the ribbon is always on the screen horizontally. Instead of pressing the up or down arrow keys, you now tab or arrow through all of the controls. This is actually a nice feature because it ensures that you do not miss any controls. Don't worry, some of the older commands still exist. For example, I'll press Alt to access the ribbon.
Home, Alt H, 1 of 7, Tab Control, Arrow.
Okay, WindowWise told us the shortcut key, which was Alt H because it's home, told us it's a tab control, and it even told us that it's 1 of 7 tab controls. Before I go through some of the commands, I'm going to press the right arrow to get to the Insert tab control.
Insert, Alt N. 2 of 7.
Now, I'm going to press the Tab key to get to some of the controls.
Pages group. Cover page. Alt and V. Grid drop-down button.
You hear WindowWise speaking several keys. These are the shortcut keys and the accelerators. Again, as we mentioned before, making it easy for you to access these commands quickly. I'm going to continue to tab through the controls so you can hear some of the new information.
Blank page. Alt and P. Button. Page break. Alt and B, control return, button, tables group, table, Alt and T, grid drop-down button.
The ribbon is also broken down into groups, so as you can tell, even when we enter a new group, WindowWise tells us the name of that new group, again, making your life much more easier and making Office 2007 accessible to you. I'm going to continue to tab several more times.
Illustrations group, picture, Alt and P, button, dialogue.
That time, I'm in the Illustrations group.
Clip Art, Alt and F, button, dialogue. Shapes, Alt and SH, grid drop-down button.
This happens to be the Shapes control, so I'm going to press Enter on Shapes and show you something even more fascinating.
Recently used Shapes group, text box, 1 of 18, list box.
This is a new gallery control inside Office 2007. Listen to what WindowWise says as I down arrow through this particular menu.
Scribble, 13 of 18.
This happens to be a particular shape, and this shape happens to be a scribble. WindowWise even told us that information, and again it said 1 of 18. I'll press the right arrow to get to the next item.
Arc, 14 of 18.
That time, we were told it was an arc, and we're on 14 of 18. So this is some exciting new functionality, and it's very exciting that this will be accessible to you when Office 2000 ships next year.
All right, well, let's turn to the next application that a lot of us use on a daily basis and quite frequently at that, and that's our browser. And I was wondering what new features are contained in both Internet Explorer version 7 as well as Firefox.
Well, with Internet Explorer 7, basically our 5.5 supported Internet Explorer 7, but there were some things that, you know, whether that be the tabbed browsing and things like that, we supported. But there were some cool things that IE 7 gave us that that 5.5 didn't expose, and some of that is are some of their alerts that they might fire. And some of the alerts, for instance, would be if you go to a phishing site, which is one of those sites that pretend they're, you know, your bank, and they want you to give you your bank information right there because you're going to frantically lose it if you don't, type of thing. Microsoft has the ability of kind of feeling some of those out and warning users that, hey, we believe this is a phishing site. Well, what they do visually is they kind of put a kind of highlight some information in different shades of color and things like that, so the sighted user can tell right away that, hey, this is a phishing site. So what we decided, again, we worked with Microsoft that said, hey, that's great, but we need some way to be able to alert a blind user as well. So they'll fire an MSAA event to us that we can then expose through speech or braille or whatever that will, again, give that same information. So whether it's a phishing site or any of the other alerts that IE7 can get for us, we'll be able to speak that to the user as well. So that's kind of a big enhancement that we've got there for that. And I think we've updated our set files to be able to speak a little bit better as you're moving around between some of the tabs and things like that. But we've just, again, been working with Microsoft to make this stuff work out of the box. The keyboard accessibilities they have and things like that is just gonna work with Windows 6.0. So we just kind of polished it all off from where it was already. And with Firefox, we've, our Firefox support has actually been excellent that we've done with it. So we've just kind of cleaned up a few things with it. Firefox is always evolving as well, and they're coming out with this 2.0 version not too long from now, and they kind of changed some things from under us for the better to be able to support things better in the future and things, which would have broke us in the past. So if you're upgrading to the new version, we've compensated for that in Windows 6.0. So whether you're running the current 1.5 or you're going to be running anywhere in between or up to 6.0, or rather 2.0 Firefox, then Windows 6.0 will just continue to work with you. And there's several little bugs and things like that that we've cleaned up for both IE. We made IE7 run much faster. There were some pages that could take a long time to load in. We sped that up considerably as you go through that. Made some things more reliable, brought some information that wasn't maybe read before, we've got going better. So a lot of those little things that we've cleaned up on, again, based on feedback that we've received from people. Our README file goes through in a much greater detail of all the individual bugs and features and things like that we've done, and it will itemize a lot of these differences that we've done in these applications. But
right.
We know the web is the future, so we want to make sure we don't lose ground on these things.
Internet Explorer 7 is Microsoft's latest release of their popular web browser, and boasts the popular feature of tabbed browsing, along with several security enhancements, built-in RSS management, and some performance enhancements specifically geared toward Windows Eyes and Browse Mode. Let's take a closer look at some of these features. I'm going to launch Internet Explorer 7 now.
Start menu, Internet Eye. Windows Internet Explorer, custom control, 34 links, 2 on clicks, 5 headings.
As you can hear, Windows Eyes Browse Mode kicks in automatically when Internet Explorer 7 is opened, just like it does in Internet Explorer 6. If you're familiar with tabbed browsing in Firefox, you'll be right at home with the tab features of Internet Explorer 7. I'm going to press Ctrl-T to open up a new blank tab.
Combo, edit box, address D, about tabs.
I'm placed in the address edit box where I can type the web address of the page I want to open in the new tab. I'm going to enter Google's web address and press Enter.
Google.com. 19 links. Edit box, Google search button.
Windows Eyes loads the page into the browse mode buffer, just like the page was opened in its own window. Using the control number hotkeys, I can move back and forth between the open tabs. I'm going to press control 1 to get back to my first tab, the GW Micro webpage.
1. Welcome to GW Micro Windows Internet Explorer Maximized. Welcome to GW Micro. 34 links, 2 on clicks, 5 headings.
Now I'm going to press Ctrl 2 to select the tab containing the Google web page.
2. Google Windows Internet Explorer Maximized. Google Search. Edit box. 19 links.
Internet Explorer 7 includes a quick way to view a list of all open tabs called Quick Tabs. I'm going to open Quick Tabs with Ctrl Q.
Quick Tabs, Ctrl Q. List box.
I can now arrow between the tabs that I have open and press Enter on the one I want to view.
Welcome to GW Micro. Google. Welcome to GW Micro. 34 links, 2 on clicks, 5 headings.
Internet Explorer 7 also provides security alerts for suspicious activity. sites flagged as phishing websites, and sites that use special characters in their domain names could be harmful, so Internet Explorer 7 warns you if you visit these types of web pages. You will also be notified when you visit a secure site whose credentials do not match the site's security certificate. Phishing websites, that's P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G, try to trick you into providing confidential information using various scams, such as mimicking well-known websites. Let's listen to what Internet Explorer 7 says when a phishing site is accessed.
Phishing website 5 links 1 table 8 headings.
You can hear any security warning again by pressing the Speak Summary hotkey, Control-Shift-S by default, or the Status Line hotkey, Control-Insert-S by default.
Phishing website. Line 1 of 26, 5 links 1 table 4 paragraphs 8 headings 22 anchors.
RSS feeds have become a popular way to distribute anything from news headlines to podcast audio files. When a web page contains RSS feeds, Internet Explorer 7 provides a way of viewing all available feeds simply by pressing Alt-J. The GW Micro web page has several feeds to help demonstrate this feature.
J. Context menu. GW Micro RSS feed latest news G. GW Micro RSS feed upcoming events G. GW Micro RSS feed top 10 downloads G.
Thanks to a close partnership between GW Micro and Microsoft, browse mode performance has been increased across the board in all supported versions of Internet Explorer. In addition, Microsoft has boosted Internet Explorer 7 performance substantially, and WindowEyes happily takes advantage of this speed increase.
What about Skype? Skype tends to be a very widely used application, and have you done any enhancements for that?
Well, Skype was frustrating because we actually had Skype working really well with 5.5. Well, I say really well. We had it working where it was usable. You know, Skype in general haven't totally made their entire interface accessible, but they did some cool things with it back in the, was it like 1.4 or something, and we had 5.5 of WindowEyes working well with it, but then they went in and changed some things drastically on us, which broke 5.5, unfortunately. We very quickly fixed that, but unfortunately we couldn't easily get it out to the public after they did that. So not only did we fix the regressions that were caused by their enhancements, but we also capitalized on some of the new things that they've added in some of their later 2.5 or something like that versions now. So we've got it actually working much, much better. So now as you're arrowing through your contacts, the history, if you're moving from tab to tab, we speak that. The menus had some issues. Those all speak now. So basically the Skype 2.x is working great with WindowEyes 6.0. So we cleaned up all of that stuff and just made it work.
Some of the new features of WindowEyes version 6 have been geared toward the novice WindowEyes user. And the two features that come to mind most notably are the new key describer and the tip of the day dialog. I was wondering if you could tell us about these new features.
Right. Both of these in themselves, people might think, kind of yawn and say, so what? But actually, they've been very well received. And I think the feedback that we've received from a lot of people, I think, will really enhance the usability of this for beginners, especially, and even intermediate users. And even some of the advanced are going to find these useful. But the first thing I'll talk about is the tip of the day. So you've probably seen some applications that when you launch them, they pop up this tip of the day, which is just a dialogue that comes up, which is just maybe a one or two sentence thing about a feature of that application. And hopefully it's a feature that you either forgotten about or something, and it might just remind you about this. So every time you launch WindowEyes now, by default, and you can certainly turn this off, but by default, WindowEyes, when it comes up, it'll launch a little dialogue with a tip of the day. And we've got, I don't know how many are in this particular thing, but it'll just go throughout all of these things, and obviously, as we update WindowEyes, we'll keep updating all of these tips. But it just goes through and then just gives you this description. And what's also cool about it is not only do we just give you this description, but we've got a button on this dialogue that says, take me to that section of the manual. So you like look at this and say, wow, I didn't know I could do that. How do I find out more? Well, you just tab to this button that will then either launch the help of the WindowEyes manual, just take you right into the help manual, right to that section, and then you can read more about it if you want to. Or if it's something relating to, let's say maybe it's a tip about our knowledge base on our support web page, you can go to a button that will then take you to the, it'll launch your browser, whatever your browser is, and take you right to that URL of that page, and let you be able to find out or interact with it or whatever that you want to be able to do with it. So I think that's kind of a cool thing. Now, if you get tired of it and you don't like this thing coming up, you're an advanced user and this just gets in your way, well, there's a checkbox that says, don't show me this dialogue on startup. And so we won't. So you launch WindowEyes, you won't get it, and it'll be like, it never was there. But you can also, off of our help menu, we have the option where you can bring up the tip of the day there as well. So if you do shut it off and later say, no, I really do want that, you can go back in there and then uncheck that checkbox, and then from then on it will come up. And there's a next and previous button on our dialog as well. So if you see an item, or maybe you just want to sit there in one sitting and just go through all of our tips, you can certainly do that. You can just say, show me the next one, show me the next one, show me the next one. But anytime that dialog comes up, it will automatically rotate to the next one. And if you just say, oop, what was that last one? You can go back. And so I think that's going to be a cool thing, especially as we keep evolving with new and new tips as we go on. And actually, we're talking about a little program that we'd like to maybe interact. We haven't officially done this yet, but I would like to. Is somehow offering the people the ability of submitting tips, what they would consider, hey, I just found out about this, or hey, I think this is a cool thing other people would really like to see as a tip, to submit tips to us. We'll put those in, and maybe even give the people that have submitted those some recognition within the Tip of the Day dialogue or something like that. But that way it lets the user community direct where our tips are going, as opposed to, you know, us engineers sitting back there thinking we know best about everything. But I think that'll be kind of a cool little program to start up.
Right.
So that's one new thing. And then you mentioned the other one was the key describer.
Correct.
We had a lot of people asking us about this one. You know, we've got a lot of hotkeys within WindowEyes, for one thing, and people can't always remember what the keystroke is for what, or what this particular keystroke does, or whether you're just going to an unfamiliar keyboard and you don't know where all of the keys are or whatever that you might be doing. So what we've done is we've given you this new hotkey, key describer, that you can press, and by default it's insert 1 on your keyboard there. That will basically shut off your keyboard from interacting with the application that you're in. So let's say I'm in Word, and I press insert 1 on my keyboard. Well, it'll say key describer on. So now whatever key I press will not go into Word. If I hit A, Word will not see the A, but WindowEyes will say A. So you just get confidence that's there. If I do, let's say, control numpad 5, which is read current line, WindowEyes will say control numpad 5, and it will say current line, reads the current line under the cursor location, or whatever our description is there for that. So it will give you that information that's about that. But we also, if you've got like a key label assigned to this key, like let's say in Word, control home takes me to the top of the document. Well, in our set files, we've defined control home as a key label to say top of document. So if I'm in Word and I turned on key describer and I hit control home, I'm going to hear control home top of document. So that's just a shortcut that that basically just reads the key describer. So you actually can control what we speak when these keys are pressed from the key label dictionary that's there as well. So you get the key label dictionary. If it's a WindowEyes hotkey, you get its description. If it's just a standard key, you hear those key presses. You know, basically turns on all of your keyboard as you're going through that. And the key describer will get turned off. Of course, if you just hit insert 1 again, it will toggle it off. Or if you were to alt-tab away or change focus, then our key describer goes off as well, so that you know that something happened. Let's say Outlook steals away control, or some application steals away control because something happened. Well, we'll shut off the key describer so you can interact with your application and be able to do whatever you want there. But I think those two things are really cool to a beginning user and an intermediate user especially.
Okay. One of the other new features is that you revised your application help window. And that's gone under quite a bit of a revision as well. Can you tell us about that?
We did. The help that we had there before was just lacking in too many ways to be able to really do what we wanted to be able to do with it. And that is, we wanted to be able to get specific support for when you're in an application to be able to give information to the WindowEyes user what this particular control that you might be sitting on, like button, checkbox, list box, or whatever, you know, maybe give you some help on that, as well as, let's say, the main dialogue that you're in, or just the application in general. You know, just basically saying, hey, you're in Word, this is a word processor, you can do this, you can do that, or whatever. And our existing interface didn't allow that to happen. So we beat this guy up, and we also changed its keystroke. It used to be Control-Shift-F1. We changed that to Control-Shift-Question-Mark now, because the F1 key was a little bit problematic. Some applications would kind of see that F1 key and go off and do their help thing while we're doing our help thing, and so we decided to leave the F1 key alone and change it to Control-Shift-Question-Mark, which I think is kind of more like help anyway. But this will pop up our new dialog that basically puts you in an edit box to begin with, which is an edit box that's writable. So you can immediately start writing in this. But that edit box can contain one of three things when you first come into it. It can give you information relative to the application. Again, if I'm in Word, it can just give you basic information about the application. Or I can say, okay, give me information about the dialogue that I'm in. So let's say I'm in the font dialogue of Word. I could have specific information that says, this is the font dialogue of Word. This dialogue allows you to do blah, 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 blah within this thing. And it could even walk through all the controls. It could just say, the first control you'll see is the font name. You can select the font. The second control is the font size. You can, you know, whatever. You can put whatever you want in there. There's no limitation to the size of the data that you put in there. And then you can also have it be specific to the control. So, again, if I'm in the font dialog and I'm sitting on the font name, it could specifically say, this is the font name combo box. You can select the font that you wish to do for where the insertion point, whatever you want to put in there that you do. And we plan on beefing up a lot of our factory help. We haven't done too much yet for our public beta, but by the time we ship the final version, which we hope won't be too much longer, we will have beefed up our internal help. But you have control over this as well, so you can go in there and define all these things. And what's going to happen is when you pop up this dialog, it's first going to say, okay, I'm in the font dialog of Word, and I'm sitting on the combo box for the font name. When you pop up this dialog, it's going to say, is there any control-specific information for this particular control? And if there is, that's what that edit box will have up there at the top. If it's not, it says, okay, nobody defined anything for this control, but is there for this font dialog? And if that's there, then the edit box will show the font dialog information. Then it says, okay, nobody did that for the font dialog. Is there anything for Word? Because, you know, font dialog is owned by Word. Is there anything for Word in there? If there is, then it pops up that. And if none of the three are there, then you're just left for the application. But you have that radio button that you can switch between those three. So even if all three are defined, you can arrow between them and see that help that's up there. And again, this is writable, so you can make your own personal notes. If you're having an issue with the control, or you always forget how to do this, or whatever, you can go right in there and you can type whatever you want up in that particular control. And then within the same dialog, there's also another edit box that's read-only below this one that tries to give you information, a generic information about the control you're on. So let's say you're on a button. Well, this read-only thing will say, hey, you're on a button. Generically speak about how you interact with that button. It doesn't matter that you're in Word or you're in whatever. It's just going to generically say, this is how you handle a button. Or if I'm in a list box, it's going to say, this is how you generically interface into a list box. We're always going to have something in there. No matter what, when you pop it up, whatever, we're always going to have something. Even if it's a custom control, we're going to give you some generic information down there of how to interact with the control. But then you have the ability of specifically for that particular application down to the control level, to be able to give it that help. And again, we're going to beef up our factory stuff, but this is an excellent way, I think, if you're a trainer and your student is having an issue or can't remember things, or just you in general, if you're just having issues, you can go into this help type some information, make it your little outline of whatever you're doing in this, you know, particular application, whatever, and it will retain that all the time within your part of your set file collection for that application and just work with it. So I think that then now gives us the power that we can go off. And we're planning on, even within WindowEyes, which we haven't done for the release of this public beta, but for the final we will, even within WindowEyes' own dialogue, we're going to be using this same help. I mean, there's nothing specific about WindowEyes here. Well, we're going to use our own application help to describe WindowEyes. So if you're in our dialogues, whatever dialogues you pop up within WindowEyes, we're going to give you help in this information. So you could pop up, let's say, our select synthesizer dialogue, for instance. You could then do control shift question mark to pop up our help on top of our synthesizer dialog, and we'll tell you how to interact with that dialog. So it's just going to be a great way to help you with WindowEyes, to help you with applications and all of that business. So something that we've been wanting to do for a long time, and finally we were able to get this in 6.0.
I think one of the things that will be really neat for this, of course, is the new Office 2007 ribbon bar. This will be really beneficial to make sure we're navigating that ribbon bar appropriately.
Right. Yeah, there's really not that many keystrokes to the ribbon, but you're absolutely right. That's what it's designed to do.
Is
to help you if you can't remember what all this stuff is. Well, you know, just put it in there.
Exactly.
You won't forget it.
I think the big thing about the ribbon bar is it's just new. You know, it's a new type of control, so people are sort of like, oh, great, you know, what is it going to do? Is it going to do weird things to, you know? No one, you know, it's believe me, we hear about it out here in... people are kind of skittish about it, so it's going to be definitely a topic of discussion, but I think we're going to be okay, especially with a feature like that.
Yeah.
Now, we're now getting down to the last few features before we hit Braille support, which is actually a very big one, and the things that I wanted to talk about here are some new hotkeys that are now provided, And there's not really a lot to talk about in reference to them, but we just want to make people aware of them. And could you tell us about these three new hotkeys?
Well, we already talked about the calendar dialog, insert C, for mm-hmm. the calendar. We talked about the key describer, which was the insert, control shift, insert one is the key describer. I'm getting mixed up myself. Then we also added a couple more hotkeys. One of them is the battery level. If you're running a laptop, for instance, and it's got batteries, well, visually, you could usually look down in the sys tray, and you can usually see this little battery indicator. And I can usually look down there, and I can say, oh, I got about 50% left. Or I can take my mouse down there, and it'll tell me specifically, you got 47% left or whatever it is that might be down there. Or if I have my charger plugged in, I can look, and I see a little LED that's on either one color or the other, letting me know if it's charging or if it's charged or whatever might be going on. But that's not so easy to get to if you're blind. So what we decided to do is add a hotkey, insert Q, to go off and just check the battery level. So if you have a device that has a battery, it will go off, and it could be more than one battery. You could have a device with two batteries. And it will go off and take the average of all of that stuff. But it will say, you know, you've got 27% left charging, or whatever the case may be. It really depends on the hardware of what your hardware is capable of responding. But if the OS can represent it to a sighted user, we can represent that to you through Braille and speech to be able to get that off to you. And of course, if you're running a desktop and you don't have a battery, then we're just going to say no battery that's up there.
Okay. And then the other one, of course, is the new WindowEye shutdown key.
Right. We also found from people that, previously to shut down WindowEye, you had a couple choices. You could bring up WindowEye's control panel, control backslash, and then press the normal Alt+F4 to just initiate the standard OS shutdown, and then hit Enter. So you could do control backslash, Alt+F4, Enter was the quickest way, and that's the way I always had done it in the past. But people wanted to be able to shut it down a little bit quicker without having to bring up the control panel as they're doing it first. So we basically gave you a specific hotkey that you could be able to do to just bring it down with one specific hotkey, and that's Control-Insert-F4. So you do Control-Insert-F4, and then you're right at the thing that says, are you sure you want to shut it down, and you hit Enter. So basically we took out a keystroke. So, and then we also added a toggle all voices global hotkey. We had a hotkey that would toggle off the voice for the current application, but as soon as you Alt+Tabbed away, then it would go off and start voicing again for that application because it was set file specific. So what we did here now is, and one of the main reasons we added this global version is for Braille users, which I think you mentioned we're going to talk about Braille next, but as a Braille user, maybe just say, I want to shut this speech off. It's driving me nuts. I want to just read my Braille display. So you can, with one key press, just shut down the voice, and WindowEye will continue Braille normally as you're doing it. Or if you've got a sighted person that comes up and you just want to shut it down, you can do it. We didn't define this particular hotkey, or we didn't give this hotkey a keystroke by default. And the main reason is it's really designed more for Braille users. And we didn't want to define it to a keystroke that a sighted user could, that a blind user would actually hit by mistake and then have their voice turn off on them. So we didn't define it by default because we figured Braille users would define it to a key press on the Braille display that they could then toggle on and off. So I think that will make your Braille experience a little bit nicer, especially if the speech is just nagging at you as you're going around. So those are the three, other than the two we already talked about, hotkeys. So there are really five new hotkeys that we've added to WindowEye.
Now, we've already talked a little bit about Braille support when we were talking about the upgrade experience. And now let's get into some of these new features that are in version 6 of WindowEye. And the first thing is to talk about settings at the set level. What does exactly that mean, Doug?
Well, in the past, and again, we've been hearing this feedback from Braille users, but in the past what we've done is all of the Braille settings that you could do, I don't care what it was, whatever Braille setting, and we got a lot of verbosity for Braille, or hotkeys, or whatever you set up, everything was global, meaning if you made this switch, it affected you from that point on until you either restarted WindowEye, or even if you saved the setting out, then it would be there all the time, no matter what. That's what I mean by global. It affected everything, no matter what you're doing. And that was great for some things, but there were certain things that said, hey, when I'm in this word processor, I want grade 2, but when I'm over in my calculator, whatever, I want this, whatever. They couldn't do that easily. And so they would have to be turning these options on and off based on the applications that they're in. So they've been asking us to make these things set file specific. And so we did that with the options that we felt made sense to be application specific. So now, all of the scrolling options, all of the general options that are there, the graphic options, all of those things are now set file specific, which means now if you want them to be global, it's not as easy to make them global. You have to use the text to set and set to text or whatever. But typically that's not been an issue because people pretty much want this on and off in these applications or whatever. But now you can easily say, when I'm over in Word, I want Gray 2, but when I'm in Notepad, I don't want Gray 2, or whatever. You can easily do that now when you're going through that. So I think that helps a lot of people and made a lot of our Braille users happy. And then we took that not only with all of these verbosity options, and again, we've got a ton of these verbosity options for Braille, but also our hotkeys in general. If you're a WindowEyes user, you know how cool it is to be able to define your own Braille keys. It's extremely simple to go in and pop up our dialog. And if you want to define a Braille key, you go to a button that says press the key combination you want to press. You go to your Braille display, you pick, you know, you press whatever combination you want it to be. WindowEyes will pick that up, put that option in our list box, and then say, okay, now what do you want to do with it? You can add commands, you can add keystrokes, and you can go on and on and on. You can make this thing right out of book if you wanted to on each key press that you do that. So it's very easy to set this up. And, of course, our factory settings for each Braille display have all these predefined for you, but you can tweak them, change them, whatever you want to be able to do. So we took this with this set file specific, and we went even further with that with the hotkeys. A lot of the hotkeys you want to be global. So we didn't want to make all the hotkeys set file specific because that would be a hassle because in a lot of cases you do want them to be global. So for the hotkeys, we actually even treated extra special, and we said we want both. We want our cake and eat it too for hotkeys. So we allow the user to define within that same dialog that we've always had for Braille keys, there's a radio button in there now that says for all applications or current application only. So if I'm inside Word, for instance, and I want this particular key to just burp out sincerely Doug Joffrey, which I could easily do, I could set up a Braille keystroke to just burp that out into my editor. But it only makes sense inside Word, maybe. I mean, I don't need that inside Calculator. So I could say when I'm inside Word only, I want this key to be there. So I can go to my radio button, check it, and then my list box of all my available hotkeys will switch to all the keys that are specific to Word, and by default, it'll be blank because we don't do application-specific keystrokes in our factory set. So it'll be blank the first time you go in. You can put in the keystroke that you want to burp out saying, sincerely, Doug Joffrey, and that's it. And then hit OK on our dialog, and it's saved out, and it will only be active when I'm inside Word. Now, even if I use that same keystroke combination, but I'm outside of Word, and maybe I, as a global key press, I always have it do something else, that'll still work. So only when I'm in Word will it override whatever else that keystroke might have been defined to do and do the sincerely Doug Joffrey. Otherwise, I'm out of Word. If it's a global keystroke, then it will just do whatever else it's going to do. So I can define them globally, I can define them for the application, or I can define them both globally and for the application to do whatever I want to be able to do. So that is a very cool thing, I think. And it's so simple to do from our dialog. It doesn't require scripting or a tremendous amount of, you know, knowledge to be able to do this. You just go right in our dialog, easily walks you through of how to define these keystrokes.
One of the other new Braille features is the Indicate Line Change feature. And what's all that about?
Right, on the Indicate Line Change, what we had in the past is every time if you're panning a line and you're moving left and right throughout the Braille line, if we went to a new line, initially we didn't give any indication at all. And we heard from a lot of blind users that said, hey, we want to know you just took us to a new line because you wouldn't know. You're just panning and you're just going right down. And so we put out a beep, and we forced that beep. You always heard that beep over and over and over, every line change. Well, of course, like any good feature, every time we add it, we got people that want it off. So we added a verbosity in 6.0 that now lets you say when you go to a new line, whether you're using the, when you're panning left and right, do you want WindowEyes to beep at you when you do that? And so you can uncheck that if that beep is annoying to you when you do that.
And then the next feature for Braille is the auto-route cursor.
Right. This was a big request that people have been wanting for a long time. In the past, if you were reading a document, let's say you're inside Word, and you just want to read a document. Well, you can use the cursor of Word to do that, but of course, you have to then hit a down arrow, and then you got to pan over to the right, and then realize you're at the end of the line, then hit a down arrow, and then start panning that line. So that's kind of a pain to do that. You could have just used our panning, so you could just say, go to the right, you know, just keep scroll Braille right, and it would just keep panning all the way down. But what would happen is when you got to the end of the screen, you couldn't go any further, because basically what it was doing was taking the mouse pointer, and panning the screen, so it was reading you the document under the mouse pointer as we moved it around from line to line. But when it got to the bottom of the screen, well, there was nothing left, and that was it. So then you'd have to either page down or use some more arrow keys or whatever to be able to do that. And that's how people have been using it in the past. Well, we heard from the Braille users saying, hey, I just want to be able to read my document all the way down. I don't care that I'm at the end of the screen. Who cares what a screen is, you know? So now what we've done is with this option, which is on by default now, we call it Auto Route Cursor. If it's on by default, or it is on by default, and if you're in an application that has a cursor, which any editor is going to obviously have this blinking cursor, as you're scrolling from, or as you're panning left and right throughout your document, if you have a line change, WindowEyes will automatically issue an up or down arrow key, depending on which way you're panning, to move the cursor to the next line. And it will do a home or end to get the cursor to the end or the beginning of the line, depending on, again, which direction you're going. So if I'm panning right and I get to the end of my line, I am going to go to a new line, and if I am indicate line change, I'll hear a beep. If I don't, or regardless if I do or don't, WindowEyes is going to realize I changed lines, and it's going to then issue a down arrow key, and it's going to send a home key to make sure the cursor is at the beginning of that line, and then I'm going to see my cursor blinking on cell 1 over there, and then I can, again, pan right if I want to. I hit pan right again, boom, same procedure. And if I go left the same way, only it's going to do an up arrow and an end to get the cursor to the end of the line as I go through that. But that way, by hitting the down arrow key means I'm not limited by the screen. I'm going to go all the way down. If it's a 500-page document in Word, I'm going to go down and read every one of those with just scroll Braille right, whatever my Braille key is to do that. It's just going to go all the way down to the end of the document and just keep reading all the way, or the same way as if I go up. Now, if I go to an application that doesn't have a cursor, then it's going to act just as if the auto route cursor was off. Or if I've told my Braille display to track the mouse pointer, even though I have a blinking cursor, it's going to act like it's off. It's going to go back and start routing, or rather tracking where the mouse pointer is. So that allows you to have the best of both. And we also gave you a new Braille hotkey that you can assign a Braille key to toggle that on or off. Like, let's say I am toggling down through reading relative to my cursor, but now I just want to say, okay, stop it. I just want to now go off and read relative to the mouse. Well, you can assign a Braille key to just toggle off auto route cursor, or you can pop up the WindowEyes menu and go to our dialog and turn it off. But that's a lot of keystrokes. And then all of a sudden we'll be going back to the cursor or to the mouse pointer, whatever direction you're going. So I think that feature is probably the biggest Braille feature that we've added, that just allows you to just sit back and just scroll right and read through an entire document.
Now, something here that is also new in reference to the way the cursor is displayed on the Braille display, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah,
that's definitely a change.
Yeah, it's a change from our defaults. We in the past, we've defaulted both the mouse pointer and the application cursor blinking dot 7 and 8. Now, the way that we thought we were cute was we made one blink a little bit faster than the other. So if you're on a line that has both the cursor and the mouse pointer, you would see both of those cells blinking. One was just going to blink faster than the other, so you could sort of tell the difference. And then, of course, when you put them both on the same, so if you routed the mouse pointer to the cursor, they're both on the same Braille cell, it would kind of blink at a different pace or whatever. But we found that it was still difficult for Braille users to pick that up. So what we did was we just changed our defaults in our dialog, which you can change as well. The UI is there to do that. We changed the cursor to always be up for dot 7 and 8. Instead of blinking, just say always put up dot 7 and 8. And for the mouse, we left it blinking for dot 7 and 8. But what we did change, actually, is that if they are set this way, such that one's set to blink, and I don't care which one it is, if one's set to blink and one's set to always be up, and they're both set to dot 7 and 8, which is probably always going to be the case, but you can change that, then what we decided to do, because that doesn't make sense, how can you leave it up and still be blinking it? So we said, in that case, let's leave 7 up and let's blink 8. So that way you can easily tell that both the cursor and the mouse pointer are on the same Braille cell and still get what you want and do all that. But again, you still have the same configurability to be able to customize this any other way you want.
Okay, and then two other features here in reference to Braille are about new menu accelerators showing up and also being able to turn off the Braille display in specific set files through the general menu.
Right, and actually, before we get to those two, I forgot about something that I wanted to mention back in that hotkey dialog. Before I forget this, I wanted to bring it up.
Sorry. Sure.
In the hotkey dialog that I was talking about before, there was a couple other things that we did to that. And one is, and this is very trivial, but it makes a huge difference, I think, is we alphabetized that list in the list box.
Mm-hmm.
It was very difficult for people to understand the order that we had it in. which didn't really make much sense on some Braille displays especially. So we alphabetized that so it's easy. And the really cool thing we added is that we give you the first command of that Braille key press, and most Braille key presses only do one thing, but we'll give you that. So it will say, like, I'm trying to think of what a particular key press is, but whatever a particular Braille display, each keys are defined differently. So whatever the names of that key presses are, then it will say what the first function of that is. So it might say, you know, D1 scroll Braille right. This tells me when I press the D1 on whatever my Braille display is, it's going to scroll right. If it's multifunctions, it will say the key press, it'll say the first function, and then it will say multiple actions on that. So again, it's just a real quick way of you being able to go down, because a lot of times people would get a Braille display and say, okay, now what? And our documentation has all of this, but who reads that? So you could pop up our dialogue and just arrow down through this list, and it will tell you, okay, this Braille combination does this, this Braille combination does that. Just very easy to go through that list box to be able to get that. So sorry on that little side note there, and then I forgot your two new functions.
Oh, not a problem. Okay, so the first one was being able to see the accelerators for menus.
Ah, right.
And the other, just so that you can cover them both here, is being able to disable the Braille display per set.
Okay. Right, the accelerators, that was just a little bug that I don't think we would actually show the accelerators for certain applications. We would show the shortcut, like if you go into Notepad, for instance, Notepad or WordPad or whatever, but let's say the open in the file menu, we would already indicate that the O is the shortcut for that menu option. But we wouldn't tell you that it's a shortcut, but we didn't tell you that Control-O was the accelerator, meaning if I'm inside the WordPad and I hit Control-O, that will bring up the open dialog. We never showed that in Braille. Now we actually do that. So if there is a shortcut, and we would always speak it, we would speak it in the past, but that doesn't seem too fair if we speak it and don't show it in Braille. So we now show that in Braille as well. So we're in sync with speech and Braille. I mean, that, you know, we want to make sure whatever we provide in speech, we need to make sure we provide it in Braille as well. That just makes sense. So that was just a little cleanup thing that we did. And then we found out that there are some people that they have applications that are self-brailing. I mean, we know there are applications out there that self-voice, but there are also applications out there that self-braille, meaning they want to use the same Braille display that WindowEyes is using. Well, the operating system isn't going to let two applications try to talk to the same hardware device. It's going to block whoever didn't have first access to it. So in this case, you would go off to some application where you couldn't disable the Braille display so that other application couldn't use it. And the only way that you could have done it in the past was pop up the WindowEyes select Braille display dialog, which allows you to select any Braille display at any time. You'd have to go up and select none and hit enter, and then WindowEyes would release that Braille display, and then you could go off to your other application and tell it, okay, now it's time to use it. And that was just too tedious. So what we did now is we added under the general menu, we've always had an option to turn off voice, and which means that for that particular set file, voice would be off. And a perfect example would, be self-voicing applications where you want WindowEyes to let go. So when WindowEyes sensed that you're in the self-voicing app, it would automatically turn off the voice. Well, now under the general menu, there's one for Braille as well. So you can just turn off Braille when you go to the self-brailing application. WindowEyes will release the Braille port, whatever it is, and then you'd be on your way. You alt tab away, WindowEyes loads a new set file, it says, oh, you want Braille on, boom, it reactivates the Braille display, and WindowEyes is back off using it. So as you alt tab back and forth, we'll release and engage in whatever as we're able to do that. Now that assumes, of course, that your self-voicing application releases it when you alt tab out of it, and if it doesn't, then it should have its hand slapped, but that way we can communicate. So that works really well.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, before we get into most notable bug fixes, because people definitely want to know what things might have been fixed, but really we'll probably refer them to the README file for the majority of this. But one of the things, and I really thought we may want to have mentioned this a little earlier, because it sort of may surprise people who aren't used to hearing them, and this is that mouse pointers are back. And, you know, for people who were running WindowEyes back in the Windows 95, 98, you know, Millennium days, then, you know, they can recall that. But we haven't had those for a while in 2000 and XP. So I was just wondering
yeah,
what the user experience might be like for that.
Yes, well, some people will be surprised. They'll run 6.0 and they're, what? What are they hearing? Yeah, I don't know if you want to call this an enhancement or a bug fix, but we supported, as you mentioned, mouse pointers. As the mouse pointer changes shapes, whether it's an hourglass, an I-beam, and you know, whatever it may be, WindowEyes would speak that when you're running Windows 95, 98, Millennium. We never supported when we went off to Windows 2000 and XP. We never actually had that support because the operating system had changed the way that we were trying to get it, and we never actually invested the time to do it right for those operating systems. Well, now, obviously, especially since we're kind of dropping the 9X support, we thought, well, wait a minute. We got all of this mouse stuff in here, but we can't even use it because we don't even support 9X now. So we went in there and invested the time that it took to now get those pointers back. And to my knowledge, WindowEyes is the only screen reader that that will announce these mouse pointers when it changes. And as well, when you take the mouse and move it around, whether you're using the physical mouse or whatever, we can read that information that the mouse is going over, which is really cool for low vision users. But now you're going to hear these mouse pointers. So whether it's, you know, you're going to hear hourglass, I-beam, arrow, whatever, as these things change, you're going to hear that. And if you're in an application that has a custom pointer, you're going to hear some sort of number for that mouse pointer, which might even be more scary. But you can define that mouse pointer to be something meaningful for that application. Or you can just say, for this mouse pointer, I don't want to hear anything. Or, of course, you can just say, shut off mouse pointers, I don't care. But obviously, and that's kind of been the attitude we've heard from some blind users is, you know, why do I care? This is just getting in my way. But I think the problem is you haven't really realized what you've been missing. These pointers are there for a reason. If they didn't have a reason, they wouldn't be there, really. And they indicate to a sighted user very effectively what's going on. If I'm doing an installation of an application, for instance, and my arrow changes to an hourglass, well, I know that application is doing something. I can't interact with it at the moment. I could Alt-Tab away or something, but I can't interact with that installer because it's an hourglass. So now WindowEyes will tell you that it's an hourglass or whatever. Or if I hear I-beam, then that tells me, oh, okay, I can start typing or whatever. I'm in my document area or whatever the case may be. So it basically just gives me that information that a sighted user has had the advantage of having for a long time. That you can do that. Now, what we've done with this, we've always had this feature. It's just, again, we couldn't express it in 2000 and above. But what we have by default is we wait for the mouse pointer to settle down because a lot of applications, if I'm in, let's say, Word, for example, it'll auto-save its document every so often. Every 5 or 10 minutes, it'll go off and save the document to disk so you don't lose it. And during that process, it might switch really quick to an hourglass and then switch right back to an I-beam or something. And we can catch that. If you really want to know every time it changes, we can tell you that. But we default our setting to delayed, which means the setting has to be there for a certain amount of time before we will tell you that it's changed. So if it goes to an hourglass and flips back really quick, we're not going to tell you that by default because there's that delay in there. And if you turn off that delay, you'll hear every single one of those guys as they're flipping around. But the delayed one seems to be a great compromise. And then, of course, like I said, you can just turn it off. But I think if you let yourself get used to it, it's kind of like the ribbon in 2007. It's like, wow. But I think if you let yourself get used to it, it actually will give you some good information.
Yeah, it really does give you, you know, really, really nice information. The thing that I am getting used to is hearing the app started, you know, because I haven't heard that in a long time. And, you know, see alarm something and, you know, app started. You're like, what? So, yeah, it's been a while. So
I should note Braille users, of course, will hear that. Well, they will see that, rather, in the quick message mode of Braille.
Right, right.
So they will see that flip up in the quick message mode of Braille. So even deafblind users are going to be able to tell what that mouse pointer is doing.
Sure. Now let's talk about the most noticeable bug fixes. And what might some of those be in version 6, Doug?
Well, there's a ton of little enhancements and things. I don't think there were, I mean, that's the strongness, or strongness? That's a good word. That's we put out WindowEyes as public betas. We seriously listen to that feedback. We have our error reporting. All of that stuff has allowed us to have these stable releases where we don't need these major bug fixes. But given that, you'll find the README lists a million little bug fixes. But they're not substantial ones. They're just minor things that were irritating, that type of thing that we've cleaned up and resolved. So I'm going to refer people off to the README that goes through in really good detail of all of the little changes. But I don't think there's any one major bug fix that, you know, oh, stop this blue screen from happening, things like that. Because again, WindowEyes, I think, is very stable, just based on the reviewing that we do, the public betas, and the error reporting we have.
what might be coming in the future for WindowEyes after version 6?
I should just play my little sound clip that I play it every time.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, actually, obviously, as I mentioned before, the first thing we need to do is 6.0 isn't going to necessarily directly support Vista because Vista's still a moving target. But we're going to put all our guns into, even after we release the public beta, we're going to obviously start continuing working on the Vista support and making sure that we support Vista when Vista ships. And as I mentioned, that will be a free upgrade, whether we call it a service pack or a new version number. I'm not into that stuff. But whatever it is, we'll make that available when Vista's ready to go. So that's right now where our heads are, right there. Beyond that, you couldn't get it out of me. So
you'd have to shoot me, huh?
Okay. I would have to shoot you and all your listeners.
All right. Well, we don't want dead main menu listeners. We want them to come back. Well, Doug, thank you very, very much for joining us this week on Main Menu. We do very much sincerely appreciate it, and we're looking forward to WindowEyes and Vista support. We'll definitely have to have you back, and maybe you can help some of us as we journey toward Windows Vista and figure out exactly how all that's going to work.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, Jeff. I appreciate the opportunity, and I'd love to talk Vista to you when I could talk to you now about it, but I'd rather wait till it's actually released. And
right. Well, it could change.
Some good stuff.
Yeah, it could change, too. So, all right, well, thank you very much, Doug, and we'll see you next time on Main Menu.
All right, thank you much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.